BBC Radio Berkshire with me, Andrew Peach. Morning, welcome to Wednesday's show. All week at this time, we're bringing you the new ballads of Reading Jail. This is a project we've been working on for months with a team of poets who've been working directly with guys in Reading Jail and other places round here. And the idea is to update Oscar Wilde's original Ballad of Reading Jail for 2009. We've already heard on the show how much writing is being done by inmates and how valuable it can be to help them express their emotions, get some perspective and be part of the rehabilitation process. We got John Potter from Company Paradiso, who's been working with us on this with me in the studio again this morning. Morning, John.
Good morning.
And we've also got Tim Turnbull now. Tim is the writer in residence at Edinburgh Prison and with us live. Hi, Tim.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show. How did you get involved in all this, Tim?
I started about nearly five years ago. I got a job at a young offenders institution in Staffordshire.
Right.
And
so I guess this is the sort of theory that encouraging people who are being punished, who are behind bars, to get their feelings out and to engage in this kind of artistic pursuit has been around for a while.
It has. It's been tried in a lot of prisons, pardon me, around the country. It started recently in Scotland, but Ballads of Reading Jail is a very specific project. It's and that's dealing with people outside the prisons as well.
So. Yes, absolutely. We're going to talk a bit this morning, John, about relationships with dads. Be interested to hear from you at home if you grew up without a dad and you're inspired by what you hear on the show this morning to talk about your relationship with your dad or what it was like growing up without dad being around. 0845 900 1041, because this is a theme that's come up again and again in talking to, you know, people who are in this sort of situation, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. An awful lot of lines, I think, written in prison we've found are to family or to loved ones. I think it's the commonest form of writing in prison. And we were finding a lot of lines about being a dad or about prisoners' own dads.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we'll hear some of the work in a second or two, but can you draw any kind of strands together and give us a sense of what we've learned about those relationships, the dad relationship through all of this?
Well, I suppose you could say that it's has a huge influence, and you could say that many people in the prison system are struggling really hard to come to terms with, you know, a lack or a loss of a father figure,
Is that why they end up there? Is that why a lot of people go off the rails, because dad's not there, dad's not around, or that the relationship with dad isn't good?
I think so, yes. I mean, I think that is... that is common. I think dads give us a sense of our own direction. I feel that myself, you know, although I didn't do anything like my own dad did, as I go on in my life, I keep finding myself doing things like him. So our dads influence us in a subliminal, very subconscious way.
We all turn into
them. We can't get away from them.
it's
there. Now imagine if your dad, for example, was inside himself. That is a terribly, terribly difficult position to be in, and it's really hard to break that kind of unconscious cycle that I'm talking about.
Right. Going to hear from Luke now. Luke was sent to Reading Jail when he was separated from his baby son, of course, and this is some of Luke's story.
I was on a downward spiral going nowhere. We'd have a few drinks and then end up doing stupid things. It'd start off minor, like car thefts and things like that. As we got older, we started drinking a bit more, getting a bit more stupid, and things started getting a bit more serious, where we'd end up getting into fights. And what I actually got sent down was for robbery. When I went to prison, I left my son and my girlfriend out on the outside, and we drifted apart, and she went her separate way and on to move to Bristol with my little boy. He's an absolute gem. I haven't seen him for a year and a half now, but it's actually his birthday on Saturday. But he's beautiful. When he was younger, he had blonde hair, blue eyes. But his eyes got dark and he'd start looking more like his mum. But in a big way, I feel like I've let not just my son down, but obviously his mother. I know it can't be easy for anyone when a family member goes to prison, but she stayed by me as long as she could, and I couldn't expect her to stay and wait because I was in there 2 years, 9 months. And it's not I don't love her, I do still care about her, but the only mutual tie between us is my little boy. When we split up, I started, when I was still in Reading prison, I started writing the occasional bit of poetry to my baby's mother. I never used to keep him while I was in jail, because it's, well, I don't know why, I don't know why I was embarrassed about it, because it's a good way of getting your feelings out on paper. Okay, this song is called Valentine's Day. It's a poem I wrote about my little boy and being in prison. I love you and our little boy, that's one thing I can say, but our love was not to be, because it was Judgment Day. The prisoner chaplain stepped in, brought us to talk together. We didn't see eye to eye, I found we wouldn't be forever. I did my best to be there, I gave all the love I had, and I want my son to grow up and learn to call me dad. We've both got new lovers, but I can't get you to see. I'll always be there, but you won't reply to me. 4 years have gone by, and my heart still fills with joy, but you've moved far away and taken our little boy. Where is Cupid now on Valentine's Day? Now I'm out of prison in a town where the demons play. I did my best to be there. I gave all the love I had. Now I know my son will never learn to call me dad.
That's Luke's story and Luke's poem. Tell us more about Luke, John.
Well, I know that poem ends quite sadly. I would say that Luke is a real success story for the probation services. He's got a job. We were having to meet him in the evenings, you know, outside working hours, which is great. He's got a girlfriend. I know he's sending money to his son, and I think that I know he's really committed to his little boy, and I hope over time that things will sort themselves out so that he can have a good relationship.
Yeah, and he sort of the emotion of the connection that he has with his son, you know, that we all have, you know, I can relate to that, having a little boy myself, speaks volumes. You know, a small number of words says a lot there, which I suppose is the, you know, what this is all about, isn't it?
Very much.
It's very difficult when you're in prison to keep relationships together, whether with partners or with fathers or with your own children. So a lot of that comes out because it's what the blokes are thinking about a lot of the time. So it's and some of the men that you work with have never really had a father that they've known, or you know, positive roles and models in their male role models in their lives.
And I guess, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but some guys inside will have had dads who were inside as well, so that there's some sort of perpetuating thing going on there sometimes within families, isn't there?
Yeah, whether it's cause and effect, it's difficult to say. I'm not a criminologist, my wife is, but I'm not. But there are whole families who have a history of being in jail, and it's very hard. I mean, the poem that I'm going to read later, the guy says, "This is who I am," and it's almost that's your identity. You are somebody who is going to go to jail, and the idea of we're using the poems and the work that we're doing is to give blokes ideas that there are other things that they could be doing, that there are other ways to look at yourself, that you can be a writer, an artist, as part of your identity.
I guess missing your family members in the way that's being expressed this morning is, you know, such a big thing for someone when they're in prison, and for the family as well. Is the idea that this is what you cling on to, John, as, you know, the thing that might get you on the straight and narrow so you don't put yourself and your family in that situation again?
I hope so, yes. And I'll just go back to this idea about story that we mentioned, I think, yesterday and the day before. Understanding your story is, for me, a fundamental thing here. And understanding your story also means understanding the part that other people play in that story. And these can be people who've had a negative influence on you. And that, you know, that can be incredibly sad, but ultimately, to move forward, sometimes we have to understand other people may have a negative influence on us, and that we may need to understand that and go forward in a different way that's more positive.
Now, if you grew up with Dad not around, with Dad in prison, I'd be very interested to hear your story this morning on 0845 900 1041. When you hear something like Luke's story that we just had on, I guess one of the people you feel desperately sorry for is the child involved. Our next ballad is written from the perspective of the child, the son, and it's called When I Got Stuck.
He comes and he goes and he comes and he goes and he don't come. Mum, is he going to stay? Maybe he might. The next thing you know, he's on the next flight. Half here, half there, no time to spare. He's living in the fast lane. I'm on my bike, he's on a train. I hear he's on his way back, coming in from the end of the track. Then he goes, 4 long years, I got nothing to say to that. I got myself in a great big mess, you couldn't expect more or less. From a low-class citizen like me, got stuck in traffic, took the shortcut, I chose that path, and had my laugh. Then came the day, they put me in a dark place to stay, and I think of him. He came and he went and he came and he went and he didn't come.
Tell us more about that poem, John, and where that one came from.
That poem is by Marco, and that beautiful lyrical first line was said in a poetry class when we were just talking about dads, because another of the guys had written a poem about his dad, and I said to Marco, you know, this is a fantastic line that you've just said. You know, how about developing it? How about trying to write some more? And he did.
Is that how a lot of poetry starts? You know, someone literally expresses something in a beautiful way, or not really?
I think that was... he just had a way with words. He just had a you know... He spoke in a lyrical way. Well, on that occasion, he did, anyway.
Mm. Do you ever find that, Tim, that you just got like, you know, you do the poetry without even thinking about it?
A phrase will come to you, and you can build up, you know, you can build a whole poem on one phrase. I was working with somebody yesterday in the jail, and we just talked and talked, and he wanted to write a story for a particular reason, and it's about staying in touch with somebody, somebody important, a woman that he's kept in contact with for 20 years. And we just talked it through until phrases came up that he could use, and he got the key for the story that he wants to tell.
Sure. More coming up. The new Ballads of Reading Jail on BBC Radio Berkshire this week. I'd like you to join in. Give us your reaction to what you're hearing. Maybe you grew up without a dad in prison. Be interested to hear your take on this whole importance of the central relationship between fathers and sons. We've got John Potter from Company Paradiso in the studio with us, because John's been doing a lot of work on this project. And we're focusing this morning on fathers and sons and the difficult relationships that people can have with their dads, sometimes leading them to be inside, the difficulties of having a relationship with your dad or your son when you are an inmate. Not only our young offenders have been focusing on relationships with their dads, also our project poet, John Hegley, who was here in the studio a couple of days ago, he's been using poetry to reflect on his relationship with his dad as well.
I've got to say that I went through quite a long journey about understanding my relationship with my father through the poems, and it's only just this year. I started in 1989 writing that stuff, and I would say it's only just now, 20 years later, that it's been a real process of understanding it. First of all, I was angry with the things that went wrong, and then I got over that anger, and now I've come, sort of, that light has sort of gone out now, and I've been able to see a more gentle thing, and the fact that basically that he loved me, and although he got angry with me, look at the thing. You got to see the sometimes the bad just blots out the good stuff.
John Hegley talking to me on Monday's Pete Show this week. Now, John Potter here in the studio. Tell us more about the John Hegley poem we're going to hear next.
Well, this is a poem that that John wrote, you know, in a his collection called Uncut Confetti, and you know, I think it's really great that John has been able to talk about his own experiences and share that kind of feeling with the writers that we've been working with.
And it's called Getting in a Lava.
Patrice proceeds to pare the apple peel with his pocket knife, and as he uses it again to divide the flesh, it triggers a forgotten flash of my father. Him sat at our mealtime table with his own penknife, generously giving me the best slice from hands cracked to angry canyons and salved with Vaseline. Dad, you were sometimes ready to erupt, but in spite of any scalding spanking which you gave me, I was never in any doubt that you would unquestioningly sacrifice the rest of your life to save me.
Well, John's a professional performance poet, so you expect his stuff to be good. That was good.
Yes.
Enough said, maybe. Enough said. What did you make of that? Tim Turnbull, the poet in residence, Edinburgh Prison, is with us as well live this morning. What did you make of that
one? It's lovely. Yeah, it's lovely. I have that collection on my shelves.
Yes, I bet. Essential for someone in your line of work.
Yes, yeah.
We're going to move on to another poem now, written by a dad in jail. The poem is called Making Peas, and Tim's going to read it for us in a second or two. But you better give us a bit of context, a bit of the story of how this one came about, John, first of all.
Yes. This is a poem that when I first read, I thought was about drugs and about addiction, but actually it turns out that it's about selling drugs, and the writer made that really clear. I'll just explain that making peas means making money, and shot means sell. So shot is sell, and Henny as well is Hennessy brandy.
Okay, so this is Making Peas on BBC Radio Berkshire, read by Tim Turnbull.
Shot by the clock, how can I stop? Always making peas, this is who I am. That boy who sells grams for £40. Now my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm moving out of this crack house for good. No more sharing the kitchen and bathroom, no more police raiding my bedroom. I'm moving with my girlfriend to the other side of town. She's 8 months pregnant. Fresh windows, doors, carpets. I'm going to do it up nice for her, and a little garden at the back to work with. Summertime barbecue, a table and chairs. Just jamming with my people, sipping on Henny. This is the life for me. But you see, shotting is a habit. This is who I am. It got me put inside. The judge gave me 8 years. I've made too many bad moves, and now karma's come true. Can't see my son grow. Can't see him smile. Can't see my girl's hips. Can't kiss her lips. When I think of giving you up, I think of being broke, living with no hope. I've been doing this since the age of 14.
Tim, thank you for that. Well, I mean, you hear that, in some ways you feel, you know, sympathetic, like with many of the other poems you've heard, the old poor bloke, you know, he's missing the people he cares about. But actually, he's also talking about the fact, more or less, that he's going to go back to this way of life when he's out of prison, isn't he?
Yes, I know. I think this is the poem that's least easy to feel sympathy for. And, you know, I think it's important to, you know, to read it as well. And that, you know, that this is a prison experience. This is sort of a harder view, and this is somebody dealing with really intractable things. But I would say that, again, this guy, Carl, he's doing a lot of writing, and I know the education staff at Reading Prison feel he's developing quite a lot, thinking certainly quite deeply about himself, and he's doing a lot of good writing and a lot of good artwork, and you know, we'd hope for the best.
You can but hope. I mean, he's hacked off about his situation, but you're not sort of getting the remorsefulness and the sort of sense that it's going to change and all that from that poem.
No, you're not at all.
But at least he's honest.
He's honest, and that is, you know, that is a common sentiment in prison. But I would say, thank goodness, he's doing a bit of writing and reflecting. There are many who aren't, and he is, and I always have hope for somebody who's reflecting like that.
How did it feel to read it, Tim?
It's quite moving in a strange way. It's what I was saying about that this is who I am. It's the inevitability of it. It's if people get stuck in a rut, they feel as though they can't move outside. I think if you start working on things like this and find that you can be good at other things, the writing, the art or whatever, that you can move on and become somebody else.
Because it's a lovely sort of idea that, you know, bad lads go into prison, get involved in a project, start writing poetry, and then, you know, become all kind of fluffy bunny about life. And sometimes that might happen, and it's lovely. Many times, of course, that's not going to happen, but at least we're still getting a bit of genuine emotion expressed, which can't be a bad thing. I mean, that's what I'm taking away from just hearing that for the first time.
Sometimes it's just a way in, because these are people, a lot of people that I work with have real difficulties with literacy, and getting them to engage with the education system is very, very difficult. If you can start from the point of view of writing poems or stories or something like that, and then it's not English, it's not a class, it's not teachers, it's just about talking about things, but putting it on paper. And, you know, I've seen over the years people who couldn't read at all move from that stage to where they can read newspapers, which is a development which will help them when they get outside.
Been talking this morning about relationships with your dad. If dad wasn't around when you were growing up, maybe that was difficult. If your own dad was inside, maybe that, you know, perpetuates the same thing in your life. The difficulties of guys who are inside and relationships with their own sons. Want to join in? You're welcome. 0845 900 1041. James is in Thatcham. Hi, James.
Hello.
Tell me about your story, James. What happened to you?
I'm the eldest of six kids, three from one marriage, three from another. And my dad and my mother divorced when I was 8 years old. And I didn't really see him at all in my formative years. I sort of bonded with him later on in life when it was a bit late, and he died tragically about 3 years ago.
So, I guess this means that you missed out on having a male role model, the sort of male role model that most of us do have, even if we don't notice or appreciate that fact at the time.
Well, as I got older in life and have had more of a chance to reflect, because I've just become a father myself, at the time I didn't think it made a difference, but looking back on my life, I can see that there were certain aspects which a role model would have certainly helped me, and I tended to find my own role models either by hanging out at school with people in the year above or through fiction. My role models, unfortunately, were big drinking sportsmen who ideally were charismatic as well.
Mm.
Richard Burton, Peter O'Toole, Richard Harris being perfect examples of who my role models were, who, very talented, ended up destroying themselves.
I mean, does that give you insight or sympathy even with, you know, people who end up in prison who might have had a, you know, similar sort of story and perhaps just took it all to a more extreme level than you, James? Did you sort of see, do you in any sense see where they're coming from?
Oh, definitely. Now, I mean, I'm coming up to 45 now, and I've been through some pretty tough experiences in my life, and I don't envy people who don't have some form of role model. I mean, I was lucky. I had a great mother, but all three of us boys struggled when we were away from the environment of public school, which basically we were all quite talented. We were told what to do, and we were all quite good at things. But when it came to the age of 16, 17, 18, there was nobody to say no, really, or yes, or you're doing the right thing. I was a good sportsman, and I needed a role model. I ended up, you know, becoming a bit of a rebel, as did my brother. And I started drinking too young. I was smoking when I was 16, 17, and a promising start in life suddenly had gone astray.
Sure. James, thank you for telling us a bit of your story on the show. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That's James in Thatcham. I mean, it is interesting the extent to which it's true that it sort of could be any of us, you know, in a, whatever set of circumstances, any of us could be in the position of these guys you've been working with writing poems in Reading Prison, John.
Mm. Yes, I know, and that's a really good contribution. I must say that I phoned my eldest son last night. He's only 11, and I don't see him as much as I'd like. And I said I was talking about fathers and sons on the radio today, and I don't very often say this kind of thing to him, but I said, look, you know, I thought I'd phone and say that I was thinking of you, and I do love you. And he replied, yeah. Dad, you know it's my birthday.
About the Xbox, etc. We're in song tomorrow morning, same time.
Yes, that's right. Some of these lines go really well into ballad, into, you know, song, the music, and that's what where we'll be going tomorrow.
Okay, Tim, good to have you on the show this morning. Thanks for being a part of the project. And John, we'll see you tomorrow, same time.